It is taken for granted that I am speaking to those who are 100% concerned and dedicated to what should be regarded as the ultimate purpose of life. We are not discussing what usually goes by the name of a ordinary good life or a virtuous life of the public attitude or a so-called righteousness that keeps us going in the world. This is a very serious subject that we are discussing, which is almost a kind of life and death matter for those who can realize its importance. But it is difficult to bring into one's mind its seriousness on account of the inveterate sluggishness of human thinking. The sheep that are being driven to the butcher's shop have no idea as to what is going to happen to them. They eat well, become fat, and bleat in the usual manner, not knowing that they are heading towards a doom. Such is the fate of the majority of mankind. But some sheep may be awakened. My fate is terrible. And then it is that one begins to do whatever is possible under the circumstances. We have to be very, very cautious, and forethought should be our watchword. There is a whole humorous story about forethought, how we have to connect one event with another event and realize that something is going to happen in the future. It may be in the far off future. It appears that an ancient king was fond of rearing monkeys. That was his hobby. He used to collect all species of monkeys or variety of monkeys and feed them and maintain them in his palace for his diversion. There were huge monkeys. In the palace, there was also a stock of sheep. And it appeared that one sheep used to run into the palace kitchen every day and try to snatch some eatable from the kitchen. The cook used to drive it away, giving it a clout on the head. Every day, the sheep will rush into the kitchen, in spite of its getting a beating repeatedly. And the cook used to give a beating with a stick whenever it entered the kitchen. One of the monkeys which were reared in the palace observed this phenomenon. And the leader, it was the leader of the monkeys, the head monkey. The head monkey summoned all its brethren and said, "My dear brethren, we are in danger. We have to quit this palace immediately. Our life itself is perhaps going to be in serious danger." Then all the monkeys asked, "What is this danger?" we are taken care of so nicely, fed so beautifully, we have no botheration or worry about food, which we may have if we are in the forest. What trouble? What danger? His leader monkey said, I cannot explain to you all this, but we are in a serious danger. You must leave this place immediately. We should not live in this palace anymore. But the other monkeys asked, what is the matter? Why do you say that we are in danger? Then the leader said, listen to me. There is a sheep here which runs into the kitchen of the king every day and gets a beating from the cook. And it is so foolish that in spite of the beating it goes every day. Now one day the cook will get so angry with it, he will beat it with a firebrand. That is the firewood which is burning, the faggot that is burning. He will not know what he is beating with, he will simply strike it with a firebrand in his anger. Then what will happen? The hair on the body of the sheep will catch fire. Now in panic it will run hither thither and enter the stable of the king. Stable where horses are tied and reared in the palace. And there is dry grass in the stable, all which will catch fire. The fire will burn the horses. They will be scalded, burnt. And these horses are so dear to the king. Their skin will be off because of the fire. Then report will go to the king. Oh Lord, your horses are all half dead. Their skin is all off. Oh God, he will say, they are all very costly horses and they are so necessary for me. Now what is this? All the skin is burnt like this. What is the remedy? Oh my dear children, the leader monkey started telling, there is only one remedy. That is the fat of monkeys. Now you know the danger. Oh old man. These monkeys said, your brain or anything, foolishly you are thinking something. Somewhere you are connecting something. All this is vain thought in your head. We are well taken care of by the king here. We shall not leave this place. If you want to go, you go. Then the leader said, all right. I have given my advice. I am quitting. That very day the leader monkey left. And whatever was predicted by this monkey happened. So all the monkeys were boiled and their essence was taken and smeared over the burnt body of the horses. Well, the story goes on further. We are not concerned with the further fag end of the tale, it is a different subject. This is a story given in our fables for illustrating forethought. Apparently it has no meaning. From one thing you are connecting another thing. But forethought is also the capacity to connect causes with effects and effects with causes. Pig-headedness cannot be regarded as wisdom. Seekers of truth, though we may be, our sympathy for living the life of truth may be only in the lips. Because we are well fed in the palace of the king. What is the trouble? We have got our daily meal, we have got our clothes, we have got our house, we have got our friends, we have got every sort of comfort. Where comes the need for living a life of truth in a peculiar, far-fetched manner, in the Upanishadic sense? This is what the small monkey is told, the leader monkey. Why are you blabbering all these things while everything is wonderful in this world? But you don't know the day will come when you will be boiled, cooked by the fire of time. And the same fate of the monkeys will be the fate of mankind. But before that happens, would it not be wisdom on the part of far-sighted persons to look into aspects which would be practicable in freeing themselves from this possible danger? Danger is everywhere. We are living in a world of danger from every side. That we are not harassed with the thought of death or destruction every moment does not mean that it is far off or away from us. Maranam prakriti sharirinam vikritir jivitam uchyate budhai. When the queen of King Aja, a great emperor of the solar race in India, died of an accident, the king wept and beat his breast and went to his preceptor Vasishtha. Oh, my queen is dead. I am feeling that life itself is worthless. What is your advice? So, Vasishtha gave very short reply. Your Highness, that you are subject to death is no wonder. That you are living is a wonder. Maranam prakriti sharirinam vikritir jivitam uchyate budhai. This is all he said. This is a shloka from Raghuvamsha of Kalidasa. This is what Buddha also said. That the apparent security of life is an illusion. Everything is insecure in this world. That is the truth of the matter. This is not merely Buddha's statement, discovery, or the wisdom of Vasishtha, but also the conclusion of great stalwarts in modern science. We do not know science, we do not know philosophy, we do not know anything, nor we want them, because we are happy. But this happiness is itself going to be our foe. The comfort and the joy which is apparently around us is going to be the cause of our own ruin, because this joy is not real. The circumstances of life which make us feel that everything is all right for the time being are subject to dissection, disunion and disintegration. Whatever experience we have in life, is the outcome of our personal relationship with certain conditions prevailing in the world outside. These conditions are not permanent and they cannot be permanent. Every cell of the body changes. Every moment we are subject to transformation in the entire structure of our body. There is a perpetual vehement movement of every atom of this body, as it is the case with every object in this world outside. Everything revolves, rotates, vehemently moves for a purpose which no one can understand. Even an inorganic stone is supposed to be constituted of minute particles which are vehemently active, even inside an apparently static stone. There is no such thing as a static object in this world. Everything is moving and very ferociously moving for some purpose which you or I cannot understand. Now our experiences are brought about by certain associations of the conditions of our body with the conditions of things outside. Sometimes the frequency or intensity of the conditions of the world outside goes beyond the capacity of our body to receive its impact. Then we cannot know what is happening outside. We cannot know that there is such a thing called heaven. For instance, we cannot see celestials with our eyes, because the celestial realm or the heaven that we are speaking of, which we have heard of, is a condition of living, a set of circumstances whose frequency is far more intense than what our bodily conditions can bear or receive. To give you a gross example of today, your eardrum cannot receive broadcasting waves sent from broadcasting stations. If the BBC is speaking something, your ear cannot hear. Though these waves of the broadcasting station are impinging upon your eardrum, because there is no receptive capacity of the eardrums. They are very gross. We have the capacity to receive only certain types of influence. The influence should not be below our present condition or above our condition. The body will not receive what is grosser than its own condition nor subtler than its condition. And so we are in a peculiar temporary state of affairs where we are compelled to mistake a transient or fleeting set of circumstances for the entire reality. That is why we are happy in this world, very, very foolishly indeed. And the student of yoga sees this with his piercing eye. Dukhameva sarvam vivekina, says Patanjali. For a person of understanding, everything is sorrow in this world. There is no joy, because this joy is a phenomenon which is projected falsely by passing conditions which should not be mistaken for everything and all things. Why I mention all this is because that because we as seekers of truth or students of yoga should not take yoga as a diversion, a hobby, or a kind of play like tennis or football for which you go in the evening when the days of work is over. We are not playing tennis or football here. This is, as I said, a life and death matter for those who can realize their condition really. But we are so thick-headed often that our own conditions will not be realized by us. It is this thick-headedness that makes us appear very comfortable, happy in this world. But a subtle mind like that of a student of yoga will realize what is ahead. And it will be very cautious of even tomorrow. And so when you take to the practice of yoga, you take to a very, very serious subject, which cannot be compared with anything else in this world. And so, this seriousness of the issue should drive us into a very meticulous observation of the disciplines of yoga. And as the Upanishad tells us, not all the treasures of this earth put together can be equal to this knowledge. You should not impart this knowledge to undeserved persons, deserving persons. And you should not sell it for even the treasures of the whole world, says the Upanishad. Such is the worth and value and importance and necessity of this knowledge. Knowing this very well, it is to be considered by us as high time for taking to serious practice, which calls for attention wholeheartedly paid to this subject, for which, as we considered yesterday, we have to find time to sit quietly for a while every day to deliberate upon the various factors that are necessary for the practice. The first thing is therefore to find time. And our greatest diseases is that we cannot find time. We have no time for anything. Because we have been caught up in the movement of a hurricane or a whirlwind, which we call life in this world. And this hurricane is driving us in the direction it moves. And we seem to have no control over its movement. We cannot have even a say in this matter. But it is up to us to gain some confidence in ourselves and exert our will in the proper direction. To find time. If you want to find time, you can find time. But if you don't want to find time, you cannot find time. Where there is a will, there is a way. The activities of our daily life should be so adjusted, proportioned and allotted. In the requisite manner, that we should not allow our mind to engage itself in questions, issues or matters which are not really connected with this serious subject which we are considering, this question that we are trying to answer. It is necessary, therefore, to have a daily routine chalked out very carefully, each for oneself. Right from the time you get up in the morning till the time you go to bed, what are your daily items of routine? Is there any item there which is unnecessary and which you can shove? Forgo. If it is totally unnecessary, it should be given up. And that time saved thus should be utilized for a better purpose concerned with this aim of yours. Time can be saved either by giving up unnecessary activity or by quickening the process of even necessary activity. There are many things which are quite necessary and you cannot give them up. They have to be done for one reason or the other. But you can bestow so much concentration on these items necessary that you may be able to do them quickly. More quickly than you would do otherwise by merely wool gathering. Because time is short. And we do not know what will happen to us tomorrow. Grihita eva kesheshu mrityuna dharmama charet, says an old adage in Sanskrit. You must practice the path of righteousness . Pursue the aim of your life with such ardor, anxiety and intensity as would be necessitated at the time if death were to come and catch your throat. Now I am here. The death comes and tells you. At that time, what will you think in your mind? With what intensity will you think of God? And what would be the ardor with which you will cry for salvation? In some of our scriptures, other humorous examples are given. Suppose your hair is caught by fire, you will run somewhere, dip it in the water or do something. And with what force will you run? With what anxiety? You will not think anything else at that time. Neither food or clothing or anything else. Oh, hair is caught by fire. Or you are getting drowned in water. You are gasping for a little breath. What would be your feeling at that time? Such, they say, is to be the ardor of aspiration and such the intensity of your concentration, such the nature of the necessity you feel for the practice of yoga. So, This is only an introduction for the simple thing that I wish to tell. That is, you must find time to sit alone for at least a short time every day. Alone means absolutely alone, with none around you and nothing else to think in your mind, no engagements whatsoever, except the one thing that is before you. This time that you choose, maybe either in the morning early or late in the evening before you go to bed. In the middle of the day you are busy, well, it is accepted. You have got many things to do in this world. So in the middle, you cannot sit for a long time. We have to assume and accept that we are beginners. We are not advanced students. So we cannot be whole-timed seekers in this intensified form. At least twice in a day we must be able to sit. The moment you get up from the bed, you should not run to the tea shop. That is not the thing that we have to think in our mind. At least for a few minutes. Let it be even for 15 minutes. You get up from the bed and don't come out of the room at once. Let the first thought be the noblest of thoughts, most sublime of ideas, the entertaining of which will be strong enough to give you enough energy to work throughout the day in a proper manner without indulging in errors or falsehood or any kind of unwanted behavior. So should the day also end. Before going to bed, there should be at least half an hour's gap allowed for you to concentrate and meditate on these essentials of life. They are the essentials. The other things are only preparatory for these essentials to manifest themselves and work themselves out in our life. And a day should come when we should be able to give more and more time for these essentials by cutting short unwanted work and non-essentials in our life, so that, God willing, the time will come when we shall be wholly dedicated for a life of godliness, which does not mean an abandonment of earthly values, as many mistakenly imagine, but a transmutation, transformation and sublimation of all earthly values, so that in your turning towards God, you are not isolated yourself from the world or given up anything of the world, but only absorbed everything into yourself, so that you have become a larger body, a bigger person, and a more significant individual now than what you were earlier. Hari Om Tat Sat.